Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back to the Iced Coffee Hour. I'm here with Kevin. We're back. He's back. What's up, Kevin? No, this is not Kevin. This is not Kevin. This is Pace Morby, and he's an incredible real estate genius that I learned so much from today, and I really wanted you guys to listen to what he has to say today, so we have him on as a podcast guest, and thank you for coming on.
Thank you. I'm like, all of you guys are my heroes. I know it's weird, like, because I get people that come up to me at events, and they go, Pace, and they know my wife, my kids, they know everything about me. And then I came to your house today and I knew everything about you.
That's cool.
By the way, the reason that people know everything about Pace is because he has a TV show called Triple Digit Flip, and it's awesome.
Yeah, it's good. It's really cool. It's the number one TV show on A&E. We're streaming on Hulu, and we have a 6-year contract with A&E, which is pretty cool. It's a weird thing to even say.
That's awesome. How did you fall into doing that?
I fell into doing that by watching Graham Stephan's YouTube channel.
And subscribing and hitting like button. Getting your free crypto on FTX US.
We'll wait for you guys. Hit the notification bell too.
Thank you.
I did legitimately though, been watching you for a long time and started our YouTube channel a couple years ago. And I got the TV show from our YouTube channel.
Are you serious?
Dead serious.
They just sent you an email?
So do you guys care what I say?
Yes.
You do care?
No, I mean, I want to hear.
Okay, so here's what happened. So in the real estate space, and I imagine in crypto and other things, same, like for you and me, probably a lot more similar. How do I get started in real estate? It's got to be the number one question you get. And so one day, my cohort or my best friend, Jamil, who was on the TV show with me, you've met Jamil at that party at my house. We look at each other and go, you know what we should do? Let's just go fly around the country and go do real estate meetups all over the country and just show people how to get started in real estate. And we did it. Mm-hmm. So in 2017, 18 and 19, I probably spent $300,000, not a coach, nothing to sell, just did meetups and then showed people how to go on appointments, do this, do that, just literally like bootstrapped and showed people how to do real estate. Mm-hmm. Then stumble into you, oh my gosh, I should have a YouTube channel. So I start a YouTube channel. And the funny thing about Jamil is that on the TV show, it looks like we're partners. We're not partners. We're fierce competitors in our local market, but we're best friends. So what happens is, you guys know what wholesaling is?
Yes.
Okay. Do you know what wholesaling is?
Vaguely.
Do you know what wholesaling is?
A little bit. 30-second explanation. Yes.
Okay. So here, a homeowner is in distress. They're in foreclosure, right? A person, real estate investor, markets to that seller and says, hey, I see you're in foreclosure in some distress situation. Let me buy your house, stop the foreclosure, save your credit, and we'll buy your house, give you some cash, and you can, you know, move on and whatever else. Well, what you find out is a lot of these people reaching out to homeowners are actually not the real buyer. Okay. Mm-hmm. What they're doing is they get the house under contract and then they sell the contract to people like me. Okay. And it's kind of a good thing for me because I don't have to go out and look for the deals and chase and knock doors and do all those kind of things. The wholesalers will bring the deals to me. So there was a wholesaler in town, okay, that brings me a contract that I go, oh, yeah, I'd like to buy that. So he goes, 165. I go, great, send me the contract. And he goes, ah, oh, man, now I have another guy at 170. I'm like, oh, bro, you're doing me dirty here. Come on, I told you I'm good at 165. And he goes, well, I've got this guy at 170. I go, great, let me go up to 170. So I go to 170. What does he do?
He is 175.
Goes to 175. So my buddy Jamil and I were in town together. He does probably 100 real estate transactions a month. I probably do 20, right? He's much larger than me. So I text him, I go, yo, somebody's up in the night bidding at 175 on this stinking house. Am I missing something on the comps? Like, am I, you know, cause you've probably verified comps with other buddies. Like, what am I missing here? Why did somebody buy this? And what does Jamil say?
Probably it's him, right?
I'm the other guy. Yeah. I go, oh my gosh. I go, do you want to just buy it together? Let's just flip it together. And so we'll collaborate like that. And so I buy the house, just buy it with hard money. And then the we close escrow on Friday. The next Saturday, I call Jamil. I go, hey, come over to the house. Let's do a YouTube video. So I get Jamil, me, and then I put on my Instagram stories. I go, anybody who want to see what it looks like to walk through a brand new flip for the first time, how we evaluate, how we do this, how we do that, I want to show you. And so we had like 80 people show up to this house, like in 45 minutes. It was, it would be like, if Graham Stephan did it or any of you guys did it, it'd be like 500 people, right? So we had this big group of people show up, had no idea it was going to be that many people. And so Jamil and I walked this humongous herd of people through this property that was a hoarder's house. So we couldn't even walk through. It was just, you couldn't even see the floor. Mm-hmm. And we were just having a good time with it. And somehow, some way, A&E picked up on this and they go, wait, you guys are fierce competitors. You're competing on the same deal, but you figured out how to collaborate with each other instead of stabbing each other in the back. We want this on our network. This is something that real estate, you know, needs. And so we go, there's no way. So they send me a DM on Instagram. And have you guys ever been hit up by like HGTV or anybody?
Okay. No.
So when I was a contractor back in the day, I used to get hit up by HGTV all the time, but you find out they're not really HGTV. It's like, here's HGTV. They tell people like,
Scouts. Yeah, sure.
And so these scouts don't even work for HGTV. And so what they do is they go out to you and they DM you and go, hey, I work for HGTV. They don't. And so you waste months and months of your life just to find out I've been talking to somebody that doesn't actually have any ability. So I DM them back and I go, I'm sorry, I'm not interested in your in anything. I've been jerked around 1,000 times. I'm not interested unless somebody from A&E emails me with an A&E email address. Mm-hmm. And 4 minutes later, get an email from the head of the network of A&E. We want you on the network.
Wow. That's so cool.
So we never had to do a pilot, never had to do a sizzle reel. We just picked up that quick. That was 2 years ago.
So you're in your first season or?
Our first season has already aired, was the number one show on the network. And so they renewed us for 6 seasons. And now we're talking spinoff shows where they travel around the country and fix other people's businesses and stuff like that.
Yeah. Cool. That's really cool. How much of that show is scripted versus much is just
you want to
real
get into this?
Yes.
It's great. So, yeah, this is a great topic. Yeah. Okay. A lot of it is scripted.
Yeah.
And the reason being is because you have to have multiple camera angles, right? It's just like here, we've got multiple camera angles to keep the audience entertained, and you understand this punching in and doing this and doing that. So you have to have so many different camera angles. So what we'll do is we'll do a regular pass with two cameras, A and B. You know, these are like, they look like Ghostbusters, like running around with their freaking backpacks on, humongous cameras. And then you'll do the whole scene, which might be 40 minutes and they go, great, let's do it again. But now they put on wide angle cameras we got to do it again.
Wow.
So it's all real stuff, but we're having to rehearse it multiple times in order for the audience to see multiple angles. And there's no way to really document that in any real style without just having a boring camera.
Of course.
Are you part of the writing process for the script or?
Well, no, it's just, they come to us every morning and go, what's going on with the house? What's going on with the permits? What's going on with this? And so we get together and they come to us and go, okay, this is what we need the audience to understand with what's going on with this house today. So every episode is another house. And so what's challenging, I would say, about being on a TV show is how much do you guys think I make per season? Let's talk about that.
I'm going to guess per episode is probably about $4,000.
Dude, what the freak? How do you know this?
I was going to say that too.
It's $4,500.
There we go. For one of the Nat Geo stuff that I did for Netflix.
Holy crap. Yeah. So it's $4,500. But why would it make sense for somebody like me to do it?
Probably good exposure for you, right?
Exposure, right? Good exposure. It opens up doors that I wouldn't otherwise have a key to open up, which is cool. But we lose money on the show. The way we lose money is we have, what they'll do is they go, okay, we need you to go buy 10 houses. So we have to go buy 10 houses, which have carrying costs and all these things associated. And probably more importantly, opportunity costs that I could have put my money somewhere else.
Yeah.
So Jamil and I go buy these 10 houses and then we don't know when production's starting. So we got 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 houses sitting there waiting until they're ready to film. And then we have to get our crews going and it's a whole kerfuffle to like get the whole thing going. But once the momentum goes, they crank, they're professionals, they're amazing. But we have to flip houses with budgets of $150,000 in 6 weeks. Legitimately, we're doing that in 6 weeks, which you built your house, you renovated your house. Does anything get done in 6 weeks?
No. It's crazy.
We pull off miracles on the show.
Come to think of it, there was a company that reached out to me. I'm not sure if it was A&E, but very similar, where they wanted me to go and flip properties with my own money.
Yep.
And I turned them down because I was making more from doing the YouTube videos.
Right.
It just didn't make sense.
So for you, you already had that audience, right? And that base. And so for you, it wouldn't make sense to do a TV show. For me, it makes sense to do a TV show. So for us, like one of the deals I was telling Andre about is I've got a 300 unit multifamily right off the, and I know you and Ryan Pineda are doing some multifamilies. I'm so excited you guys are doing this.
Thank you.
Yeah, so excited. I was just, I was standing next to Pineda. We've been friends for years. And you called me.
Yeah.
And I was like, I can't talk. Cool. I'm talking to Pineda. And you go, come hang out. Let's do a podcast. Literally what happened. So I've got a 300 unit multifamily deal right off the strip of Vegas, right downtown.
How many units?
300.
He says it so casually.
Yeah, 300 units.
300 units, $60 million.
That's all?
$60 million, okay. Yeah. And the way I'm buying it is most people would look at it and go, okay, well, we got to raise money, right, through a fund. And we've got to go get a commercial loan for probably 70% of the value of this thing. Well, that's a big asset to go get a 70% loan of $60 million and then go raise what's 30% of that $18 million to go buy that deal.
Yeah.
So what I specialize in is I specialize in seller finance and creative finance strategies. So I got the seller to seller finance the full $60 million asset to me. And do you understand seller finance?
Hold on, let me slow this down because this is the crazy part that he was explaining to me that blew my mind, because my perception of real estate has always been like, it's such a high barrier of entry. Mm-hmm. Not only do I have to have knowledge of the market, but I also have to have a ton of money. Mm-hmm. I need to get approved.
Yeah, right.
So like my perception of real estate has always been like here, but the way of what you're doing, and like kind of like how you described it, I love how you described it. You said, if someone's making content about like fitness, you're the guy that's making content about the barbell.
Yeah, I'm so niched. Like I'm niched. And so a lot of people will want to go broad.
Yeah.
Right. Like I want to go broad. Business advice, Gary Vee style, like everywhere. Patrick Bet David, probably one of the best to do it, right? Mm-hmm. I am literally the guy that if we're talking about gym equipment, I only talk about the barbell. And so I talk about it so stinking much that anybody in my world, my real estate world, if they talk about the barbell, all of my peers go, no, that's Pace's thing.
Right.
Do not talk about that.
There's two things I got questions about that you brought up that you mentioned casually here. Hard money.
Yeah.
What does that mean exactly? And then the other thing is, what's with this fascination, it seems like, out there about multifamily?
Mm.
So those two things.
I love that.
It's like for the average person, I can't imagine anyone's like, you know what I need to buy right now?
Multifamily.
My I need to buy apartment complexes.
Well, I hear it a lot. So
I love it. You hear it like with Grant
Cardone.
Talks multifamily, and he knocks single family where he's like, don't buy single family. If I was going to start all over, I would go into multifamily. I'm like, yeah, but Grant, you started with single family. Yeah. Like you got your momentum in single family. In my opinion, single family is one of the smartest ways to get in because it's a lower barrier of entry. You don't have to understand as many acronyms and moving parts and da, da, da. So hard money.
Yeah.
So if you ever hear people say, I want to flip a house with no money out of my pocket,
mm-hmm.
you hear them, it's like the seminar, like, touche bull crap that you're like, whatever, it's not possible.
Yeah.
Guys, I flip 50 houses a year and I don't use any of my own money.
Wow.
Which is weird because when you make millions of dollars, you start going, well, why wouldn't you use your own money?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, let's think about this. Let's say I want to buy a house. There are hard money lenders. That's their business. And the reason why they're called hard money lenders is because they lend on the hard asset, not based on you. So what they do is they go, look, we're not betting on the jockey. We're going to bet on the horse.
I thought when it said hard money, I thought it was like they come for a baseball bat to come get you if you don't pay. Yeah. Like,
oh, that too, Jeremy. Stuff. We haven't gotten to that yet.
You better pay up, man.
If I Googled right now, literally,
that's hilarious, dude.
If we Google hard money Vegas, you would have probably a good 3,000 hard money lenders here in Vegas. You guys just don't know that they're everywhere. They're freaking everywhere.
But so they are expensive.
They are expensive and they're interest only.
Yeah.
Okay. So you should not take a hard money loan unless you're doing it short term.
Okay.
So if you're going to go buy a rental, do not ever take on hard money.
Yeah.
You take on hard money just to do a fix and flip. So something, 9 months or less. Typically our flips, I would say we're in and out of them in 180 days. Like the day we say yes to the wholesaler, it brings the deal to the day that my buyer on the back end, Tom and Jerry, who buy the house, they close escrow and I get all my money after the hard money lender is paid back. It's 180 days.
Okay.
May I ask, what's the interest rate on those?
Yes, 100%. So in Arizona, no hard money lender charges points. Do you know what points are?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so they'll say, all right, Jeremy, you want to buy this house for 300 grand. Yep. We're going to bring you 300 grand and we're going to fund the full purchase. Mm-hmm. There are lenders that will literally fund the full purchase.
Okay.
We want 2 points. So what does that mean? They want 6 grand up front, or at least kind of wrapped up into the loan. And then I would say the average is 12% per year. So that means my monthly payment on that 300 grand is $3,000.
Yep.
But it doesn't amortize. So next month, guess what I owe? $300,000. Next month, I owe $300,000. Yep. Next month, I owe $300,000. So in a 6 month renovation on a $300,000 flip, I'm paying $18,000 in interest only.
So you better get rid of that property as fast as possible.
Correct. Yep. But here's the thing. People always ask, like, well, Pace, where are you investing your money? Because if you're doing 40 or 50 flips a year and you're making millions, and most of my money is made in long-term, like either Airbnbs or long-term rentals.
Okay.
But if I am doing fix and flips, where does that money go? Because wouldn't it make sense for me just to deploy that money back into my fix and flip business and at some point not have to use hard money?
Yeah.
Well, no, because I'll take my money out of a deal and I'll deploy that into purchasing a title and escrow company in Florida or Texas or whatever. And my cash on cash return in a title company ownership is 400% a year.
Whoa.
And it is, to in my opinion, the only true passive income in real estate is owning a title company.
What? I understood about 20% of that. So break that down.
Okay. Why isn't everyone starting title companies?
That seems
bro, they're
what's
everywhere.
What's the barrier to entry, though? Oh, but you're only, are you just titling your own fix and flips?
No. I go out to agents. I go out to wholesalers.
We're getting too niche here. Explain to me, what is a title company?
Okay, so when you buy a house, right, you have to transfer ownership from one owner to the other owner.
Right.
You're not doing that.
Right.
Who's doing it?
Company.
A title company.
Right.
So the title company is transferring the deed from one owner to the next owner. They're making sure that the lenders are secured in any one of these purchases, and they're just doing all the paperwork.
They're basically doing the due diligence for transferring.
They are, in my opinion, the biggest chopping block in real estate in terms of NFTs. Yeah. I think NFTs will change that entire business dramatically.
Mm-hmm. Don't they also insure the deal to make sure they're...
Yeah. So there's two things. So you'll hear title and escrow. Those are actually two different businesses, okay? So escrow is the physical person that is like, hey, Andre, this is your such and such from the such and such company. Can you come in and sign for your closing documents? That's an escrow officer.
Okay,
you get paid an escrow fee to do that. But on top of that, you insure the transaction. I told you about this earlier. The title company issues insurance and they say, our girl that called you, Andre, we're going to verify through an insurance policy that she did her job right. And we're going to charge you 2% of your transaction.
So it's like I'm charging the customer insurance for my own due diligence. Which
it's like going to, it's not fair. And I don't love it. But let's say you go to Starbucks or let's say you go to Bankroll Coffee and you go on checkout, you go, hey, we're going to make sure that this is exactly what you ordered. But in order to do that, you have to pay an extra $10 fee. That's title insurance.
Customers are going
to
be like, wait, what? Why?
Mm-hmm. Right. But that's the industry. It's been around for 100 years.
Is that a requirement in the industry?
Yes. No.
Well,
I would say less than 1% of people decline it. I would never buy a property without title insurance.
Don't lenders require it? Every lender would require it. So it has to be an all cash deal and you have to, I've never seen even all cash them pass up a title company.
You'll get really experienced investors that are like 30, 40 years deep that have such deep pocket. You're like, I'm not paying for that.
Oh, okay.
But it's very rare.
Okay.
It's very rare. It just goes standard.
Okay, so you're saying you want to buy these companies?
Yeah.
Explain why.
Okay, oh my gosh, this is a whole business model. So think about all the real estate agents, the wholesalers, and all of the people that go into business. They have to have a title company handling these transactions. So if you're the central hub for everybody in a geographical area, guess what I get to do? I get to lend them money in my lending business, right? Which is a different business. I get paid on the title fee. I get paid on the escrow and I get to look at everybody's deals and I see every single real estate player in my local market because I own that hub.
Wow. Geez, so it's more than just the title company.
Oh my gosh. It's a whole whole vertical of like, so if I go buy a title company, I get it up and operational, cost $200,000. Okay. Guess what I'm making that year? $800,000.
Wow.
On one title company.
So is
that gross? What's the net on that?
Our gross, so let's say I do 120 files, which means 120 people come and purchase or sell a house through my title company. That company will gross about $350,000 a month.
Jeez.
Yeah. And then you've got the net on that. The net on a $3 million business is probably half of that, so you're a little over that. So you're probably like 1.5, 1.6, but I don't take that home. I typically have a partner.
Yeah.
So
now if there's multiple companies like that in the market, how do you make sure that yours is the one that ends up getting used?
Have a TV show.
Okay, that's fair.
Have a TV show or have a YouTube channel, talk about that kind of stuff. Like
that's fair.
If Grant, think about this. If Graham or any of you guys open up a title company, in fact, if you're a title company in Vegas and you haven't approached Graham and said, hey, I want you to be a part owner of my title company for you to talk about how awesome we are, you'd be crazy not to do that.
The DM is open.
Why haven't we done that?
Slide in the DMs, guys.
Right. So yeah. you're thinking about, like, if anytime you jump into the real estate world, you go, where are all the people making money? Well, appraisers make money. I don't want an appraisal business. It's non-scalable and it's very contingent on one human being, right?
Yeah.
There's inspectors. I do not want an inspection business, non-scalable. Mm-hmm. So you start thinking about all the ways that are scalable. A lending business. So I own a hard money lending business now too.
Do you really?
Yeah. Wow. So why not?
That's cool.
Right? So how can you get part of every single transaction?
Do you need a banking license?
You need a banking license, yeah.
You got a banking license?
One of my partners does, yeah.
Wow, that's cool.
So now when I make money in a fix and flip, instead of me redeploying it into a fix and flip, which is only going to save me 12%, wouldn't it make sense for me to take that money, go start another title company and have a 400% cash on cash versus a 12%
return? Why not just use one title company?
Well, because you have to have everybody. One in every state.
Right. So right? Once you hit 50, then you're capped.
No, because out. Like our plan in Texas is you haven't, the main goal with a title company is not just to save fees for ourselves. Mm-hmm. The main goal for a title company is for us to participate in everybody else's transaction in close proximity.
They're just gathering share. Data.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. You're gathering data. And then you get for example, the 300 unit deal. Okay, the 300 unit deal comes from me being out in the marketplace and having access to people and knowing people. And somebody goes, hey, I know you're the guy that talks about creative finance and how to buy houses with no cash, no credit, no credentials. I have a seller that wants $60 million for an asset for a multifamily. And that's the next question. Why mm-hmm. multifamily is cool. But I look at it and it's only worth $55 million. Mm-hmm. Will you buy it for 60? Anybody at this table is going to go, hell no.
Right.
I say, hell yeah.
Well, this is great, guys. I love this.
I say hell yeah, because think about this. Okay,
explain this.
In my philosophy, we have a little over 700 doors.
Yeah.
Okay. In my philosophy, the value of a property is not the purchase price. The value is what I can do with that property. Okay.
You're talking cash flow or?
Cash flow or office space or whatever.
Give us that simple example of the F-150.
Okay, cool. So here's a really good example. Okay. Because I get wholesalers at my title company that come in, they open a file and they go, hey man, I got the seller that, you know, they really, I got, somebody needs to help me. I got a seller that's in, they're motivated to sell their property, but they want Zillow price. Okay. As an agent, you probably get that all the time. Agent mm-hmm. goes, all right, I got a listing appointment today. What does the seller do? They go to Zillow to verify their price before right. your listing appointment. Well, it's no different for an investor, right? So Dale and Susan Poyer, seller in this example, Dale and Susan Poyer have a property in Mesa, Arizona, right down where I live. And they look at Zillow and Zillow says, well, if it's all fixed up, it's worth $100,000. That's what Zillow says, right? Well, the wholesaler goes, I can't make money at $100,000, but the seller's motivated to sell. Why? The seller's motivated because they're retiring. They don't want to be landlord anymore. They want to travel around the country and enjoy their retirement. They don't want to deal with any sort of tenants or anything like that, right? So wholesaler calls the seller because they, how does a wholesaler find a seller? You guys have any idea?
Those door knocking. The yellow signs.
We buy houses.
We buy homes.
We buy homes cash. We buy ugly homes. Yeah.
Those bandit signs, right?
Yeah.
But a really great way to call a seller is they pull data from websites and they show who has their house paid off.
Mm. Because you could also look through recent divorces.
Divorces, bankruptcies, probates, all sorts of things.
I've seen every which way for the whole show. They'll even look up like death records.
Yeah, water shutoff list.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot.
Hey, and this is to find who owns their house?
Well, what they do
is they use a title company.
Right. That's another thing a title company does. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so I know we're going, let's simplify this really quick.
We're getting the weeds here, yes, for a non-real estate guy.
So if I want to start in real estate, a lot of people will profess, like Ryan Pineda talks a lot about fixing and flipping and a lot of wholesale, right? Okay. Well, if I have no money, what am I going to do? And I don't have a license to be a real estate agent. What do young people usually do? Wholesale. So they go directly to the seller, cold call, text them, door knock, whatever it is. So this wholesaler gets a hold of Dale and Susan on their house.
Got it.
And why did they call Dale and Susan specifically is because they had their house paid off free and clear, which in a wholesaler's mind, that means, oh, I can probably negotiate you down a little bit because there's no mortgage keeping me from negotiating you down. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So every wholesaler in town is offering, what do you think the price is if you're a wholesaler? If you got a house that is fixed up, is worth 100 grand, what should a wholesaler offer that seller?
60.
Wait. I would say 60 is your top, 50% is about your average.
No kidding.
Yeah,
that
legit.
Below the market?
Yeah,
well, it's not that below the market.
Wait, but you said 100K.
Yeah, it fixed up. So if it's going to cost $20,000 to fix it up, now you're down at 80 to get that 100. They got to make a profit on that for all of their time. So they got to offer 60 to put in 20 to make sense in their time to be worth 100.
How much is the kid making that's making these calls?
On that particular deal, they are always looking to make 10 grand is like their minimum.
I was
going to
say 10%.
Because I'm figuring they must just work so much to try to find that one deal or that like two.
Oh yeah, I have a deal in San Angelo, Texas right now. It's an apartment complex. The wholesaler brought the deal to me. I'm paying them a $200,000 assignment fee.
Whoa.
They didn't have to buy the property. They just followed up with the seller, followed up with the seller. Finally, the seller goes, okay, I'm ready.
Wow.
Gets it locked up at $4 million. I'm buying it, paying him a $200,000 fee.
Okay. It also reminds me of like luxury stores, right? We'll walk by them and there's hardly be anybody in it. And my dad would always say, like, how do these places make money? There's hardly anybody in. I'm like, Dad, they only need to sell a couple bags a day to make a fortune.
That's a really good point.
Or it's a front.
Yeah, right. Or it's a front.
Or it's a front. They're laundering, gambling in the back or something like that.
So here's what happens on this house. So the wholesaler goes to Dale and Susan and go, hey, I need to offer you 50, 60. Dale and Susan go, we have this house paid off. All we want to do is travel the country in our RV. We're not accepting anything under what Zillow offered us or is Zillow saying.
100K.
100,000 bucks.
Yeah.
So can a wholesaler make money at that?
No.
Can an agent make money at that? Really like doing any of that stuff? Like I want 100 grand in my pocket is what the seller's saying. Okay. So the wholesaler calls me. How do they know me? Because I own a title company that they do all their transactions at, right? So they call me and they go, hey, I know you're the king of creative finance. How would you buy this property for $100,000? I go, ooh, I want that property. I'll go down there and I'll meet the seller. I have the whole appointment on, I record every appointment I ever have with the seller. So I go down there, I talk to Dale and Susan. And I say, hey, Susan, she was obviously the boss. So, hey, Susan, if I was able to come up to $100,000 on my purchase price, would you be willing to give me terms? And she has no idea what terms are. Most people have no idea what terms are, right? She goes, well, what does that mean? I go, okay, well, let me tell you a story. I used to own an F-150. Ford, you guys all know what a Ford F-150 is. I used to own an F-150 with my construction company and it hit 320,000 miles. Got to a point where like now I've got more repairs on the truck than what it's worth for me to have it in my fleet. So I pull it out. I go, I'm going to go sell this. I'm going to put it on Craigslist. So I go to, where do you go if you want to determine value of a car?
CarMax or
Kelley Blue Book, KBB.com, right? So I go to KBB, it says my truck is worth $5,000 with the as is condition, what it's worth. So I go, Susan, does that kind of sound like you? Like you went to Zillow, you saw your house is worth this, but it doesn't really matter that it's not fixed up. You just belligerently want your $100,000. She goes, yeah, makes sense. I go, I belligerently wanted $10,000. So I put my truck on Craigslist for $10,000. Did I sell my truck for $10,000? She goes, I know. I go, no, I didn't even get a call. I didn't get anything, nothing for 3 months. My wife comes into me, Susan, and she says, hey, sweetheart, you've had this truck in our driveway for 3 months. We need to do something about this. I go, what do you freaking want me to do? I'm not going to get lowballed because if I put this thing on Craigslist for $5,000, what am I really getting? Am I getting $5,000? No, I'm getting like $3,500, right? They'll justify it as an all cash offer.
Yep.
Does that sound familiar, Susan? Susan's like, yes, that's exactly what's happening to me right now. Everybody's offering me $50,000 for my property that, in my opinion, is worth $100,000. I go, okay, great. Here's what I'll do. Well, here's what I did. I told my wife, I go, what would you have me do? She goes, Pace, you're the creative finance guy. Why don't you take payments for it? I go, oh my gosh. Okay. So I literally go back to Craigslist. I change one thing. I said, F-150 will take payments. Did I now sell that truck for $10,000? Yes, I sold it for $12,500 with $1,000 down because I didn't have to check the guy's credit. I didn't have to do that stuff. I knew where he lived. I required a very specific type of insurance. He made $350 payments to me and he bought my truck for $12,500. I, the seller of that vehicle, financed him and allowed him to make me payments. Seller, finance. I became the bank. He became the owner. She's like, why would he buy a truck for $12,500? And I said, Susan, the same reason I would be willing to pay you $100 is because I can make payments to you if you'll let me, and I can cash flow on this property, and I don't have to go to a bank. I don't have to get a loan. I don't have to put a big down payment down. I don't have to do any of that. And Jose, the guy who bought my truck, what did he do with my truck? He turned around and put it in his paint company, and he had his cousin fix the engine that was having issues. And now he makes $6,000 or $7,000 a month on a truck that he only has to pay $350 for. So did Jose technically overpay for my truck? On paper.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of the exchange of value, did he?
No.
No. He gets paid, he's making $6,000-$7,000 a month. So yeah. She goes, okay, I got it. So what would you propose? And I go, if I give you $100,000, I'll give you $0 down, and I'll make whatever payment you want me to make. And so I ironically make her, I'll show you the note and deed of trust. It's great. So I was making a payment to her for $350 a month at 0% seller finance.
Okay.
Whoa. Give me one sec.
Where are you going?
Is it leaving?
No.
So that was the best or worst investment ever?
Best. Yeah. No. So anyway, I had a bit of a leak earlier today.
Yeah, leakage.
I had some leakage. Yeah, I did. Yeah.
Was it the calc reactor?
Yep. I have what's called a calc reactor.
Calc reactor?
It's called the calc washer. So it doses like calcium and alkalinity into the aquarium. And
I feel like we're talking about creative finance right
now. Yeah,
like,
exactly. Oh. So anyway, what happens is that it's so rich with calcium that you get calcium deposits. And there's like this little tube that goes into the aquarium. Calcium deposits built up in that tube. And so the water kept filling up in that reactor without going into the tank. And so it kept filling up. And then this morning I woke up with the alarm, which is that notification I got on my phone that said there was a leak. And I'm like, oh man. So I went down there and sure enough, it had been overflowing overnight, collecting in the reservoir. Yeah. So I have this leak detector on the tank where if it gets any water or moisture on it, it shuts down the tank.
Mm.
So it, you know, just in case something were to happen, it's not going to like short circuit anything. But anyway, I got a notification that there's a leak, and I was like, oh man. Well, so anyway, it was caused by moisture within the bottom of the tank. There was no leak, but it was that it's so sensitive that it's picking up moisture.
Wow. Jeez.
So I just had to dry it.
Okay.
But I kept getting these notifications.
Like how he gave Ryan Pineda a hard time about his haircuts for $100.
Okay.
I watch all your guys' stuff. The funny, we teased him. Did you hear this when I teased?
We were there. Yeah. Yeah.
When you heard
we were like,
I brought your teasing him up on stage today in front of 500 people.
Nice.
It went over really well. People loved it.
What'd you say?
I just said, does the haircut that Graham Steven teases you about, is that a write-off too? It was good.
And the answer is probably yes.
It is a write-off. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's his uniform or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
His signature. And I've noticed too, he's cutting it more and more in the center. Like
is it gradually moving?
It is. I think as he accumulates more real estate. Sorry,
yes,
Ryan.
Yes, I love that.
That's cool. But no, for personal branding, I think that's what the fact that we're even talking about it to begin with is,
it's working.
Yeah.
So where were we?
Well, where we were is it reminded me of FTX US.
Oh,
that's
wow.
What I was really thinking about. And I was thinking
for
about
personal branding. Yeah,
well,
that's great.
I was thinking about how their fees are among the cheapest.
Up to 85% lower than the top competitors.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow. I was also thinking about how you got free crypto with every trade over $10.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that's
so
crazy.
Just for the record, by the way, it's not $10. You have to buy more than $10 to get the free crypto.
Okay. $10 and 1 cent.
$10 and 1 cent, you get free crypto.
That's
the
threshold.
That's a threshold.
Yes, over $10.
Up recurring buys, which is amazing.
So you could dollar cost average into the markets on a regular basis. And they partner with Steph Curry, Tom Brady, Coachella, and
Jeremy LaFave.
And the Miami Heat Stadium.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so, you know, you got to take advantage of that. It's going to be the first link in the description down there. And
you can withdraw your NFTs.
Yeah.
No fees.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wait, what?
On the top Ethereum and Solana collections, they have no gas fees.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Because where I buy my stuff is, that's not how it is.
No. Yeah.
Well, that's why you
need over.
That's why you need FTX US down below in the description.
How do I switch over?
Yeah. Well, it's down below in the description, and you could use the code
MMFTX.
Super simple to do. It'll take you a few minutes to sign up, and they're a big supporter of the channel.
Love it.
Yes.
So that's all you need to do. The link is down below. What else am I, are we forgetting anything?
No, that's great. Crypto-friendly debit card.
Oh, gosh. Wow. They have a crypto-friendly debit card.
So, if you aren't sold by now, like, what are you doing, okay?
Yeah. So we could also talk briefly. Sam Bankman-Fried of FTX apparently is making offers to acquire some other companies. Yeah, and he bought, what, 7.6% of Robinhood.
Crazy.
There's something up on that.
He is consuming everything right
now. Yeah, I don't believe he's just doing this to make a passive investment. I'll tell you. And this is just pure speculation. I have a feeling he's going to be taking some control over some of the big platforms. I think he's taking advantage. He's buying the dip.
He's buying the dip.
The entire fintech space dip.
Yeah.
That's incredible. I think he's really smart. I think he's playing 4D chess
cornering
here.
The market.
Yeah. Whoa. Yeah. And we're not going to know what's going to happen until probably a year from now, until all of this plays out.
So that's follow like us. That's like 10 and levels above my brain.
Yeah. But he waited until these companies, their valuations have been slashed.
Yep.
And he's going in with money and just picking buying. So, yeah. So okay. We'll see how this plays out. I think it's very smart.
I want to finish off with what you're telling here, but then I want to get into real estate crash.
Yeah, I'd love to.
That's what everyone wants to know.
Yes. Yeah. So let's finish off here. I can't quite remember exactly where we left off.
We were talking about Dale and Susan. I bought their property for $100,000, $0 down, 0% interest, seller finance. Yep. I pay them the note and deed of trust that I just pulled up to show you.
Yeah.
Nice little 0% my payment, if you look at it. $375 a month, 0% seller finance for 20 years.
20 years, 240 payments.
Yep. So it pays down. So I look at that, and this is how I buy all of my properties.
Wow.
Every single door in my portfolio, I buy this exact same way. Okay. I have not bought a property on the MLS. You've been to my home.
Mm-hmm.
Roughly,
it was a crazy, crazy house.
Roughly
it
a $5 million home. Didn't pull credit. Didn't do no credentials.
In Mesa?
In Mesa, yeah.
You got the most expensive house in Mesa. That belongs in North Scottsdale.
My across the street neighbor who sold part of his company to Pornhub has the most expensive house in Mesa.
Yeah, because I'm like, Mesa's not usually
I'm like, what does that guy do? And I find out, I go, oh my God.
It smelled like horses and hay around
there. Yeah. It was one of those neighborhoods that like growing up, it's 20 degrees cooler in Mesa around this area because it's called the Orange Grove. So it's like just full of orange trees. So it's like where everybody has these big estates.
Yeah, it's a beautiful house for sure.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
So same thing. So all the way from my personal house all the way to every property.
The first thing I asked you after you explained this to me, I was like, who would trust a random guy who just calls them up and says, hey, I want to buy your house? And it's like, cool, I'm going to trust you to make payments on it. Like, how do you convince the seller?
Well, I'm not going to go to Graham's next door neighbor and say, hey, next door neighbor, would you like to sell your house? Likelihood of them selling for cash or anything else is going to be no, right? Especially right now, nobody wants to sell their house. So you have to find the people who have pain or motivation, one of those two things, right? So a seller like Dale and Susan, their story was, we want to retire. We're done with tenants. They're kind of older. So they were collecting their rent payments physically rather than setting up it up automatically. So for them, it was a burden where they're like, I want to travel around the country in our RV and we don't want to worry about this property.
Right.
So there's a motivation factor, right? So you have to make sure that that layer or that filter is added to this equation before you ask the question of why would anybody do this? That's the reason why. And the other reason why is because everybody else was offering her how much money?
Yeah, 50K.
$50,000 to $60,000. I offered her $100,000. Did she need the $100,000 right away?
No.
And also, do they not benefit from taxes as well? Is that?
I was just about to ask, how does taxes work? Let's just say she bought the property for $1,000. Mm-hmm. She's selling it for $100,000.
She only gets paid as she receives the payments.
Okay.
So most sellers would get that $100,000 lump sum. First and foremost, if they sold it on the market after they renovated it, are they getting $100,000 if they sell it for $100,000? No, because they got a big... Who pays the seller? Right. Who pays the seller's commission or the seller's agent and the buyer's agent?
Right.
The seller does.
Yeah.
So she's going to get wiped out in the front. And then on top of that, she gets this money that comes in. Guess what she's doing with that money? She's paying taxes. All right.
Now, what about the interest rate?
What about it?
You're just paying her a higher amount and kind of baking the interest rate in there. So it's like, okay.
So if you listen to the 45-minute appointment that I had with her, I said, Susan, I'm going to give you your interest rate in the purchase price. And so I baked it into $100,000. That property still to this day, I absorbed the tenant. So the tenants are still in that property. Never had to switch out tenants. Their rent is $1,650 a month. I pay her $375.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes. So doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
It's incredible.
It's great. And we've got 725 of those.
725 properties?
Not all of those are single family.
Gotcha.
A good portion of those, over 400 of those, are multifamily.
What's the most expensive house or apartment complex that you bought doing it like that?
$60 million, the one in Vegas that I'm...
But what happens if the seller says, I need the money now? Like, how long are these terms?
Great. Yeah. Man, you guys want to get deep? This is great. There's three reasons why a seller would not sell to you on creative finance. Number one, they don't understand the benefits. There are no benefits to them, or they're just confused by it. So you have to tell them in simple terms, like the F-150 story, right? Or a dozen other stories I have. Number two, they need the money right now. I've had people go, I would do this. This makes a lot of sense. I actually make more money. I pay less money in taxes. I can kind of spread that burden over many years, but I have a wedding for my daughter coming up in 3 weeks and I need to pay for that wedding. Well, that's not a good transaction for me. I can't convince every seller, right? Just like you can't, as an agent in a traditional world, I can't convince every seller to let me list the property. You just can't. Mm-hmm. You're going to go to listing appointments you don't get. And so it's the same thing for me, is I'll go talk to a seller, no matter how compelling my offer is, it doesn't make sense. And the third reason they won't sell to you is they have literally zero motivation whatsoever to sell their property. And they just wanted to hear your offer. That's it.
Sure.
Okay, so with her property, it was 100K though, but it wasn't at 350 for 240 payments?
It was I think the payment on that property is 375, but that's
okay.
375 is my payment to her every single month.
Okay. Because I did 350 times 240 and I was like, wait, that's like 84.
Yeah, 375.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, man, that's interesting. This is like something I've never even knew existed. So
so once you get into buying a lot of real estate, you'll go to the MLS right now. If you go to the MLS right now and you type in seller finance, I would say that in Las Vegas right now, there's 150 people listed on the MLS saying, I will sell to you on owner carry or seller finance. It's like that in every market.
Usually I've seen them do that though for like 5 years. It's for a limited term and then they're hoping that you're going to cash out refi after that.
Right. So here's how I do my balloon. So this is called a balloon. So what they'll do is they'll give me a 20-year term like Susan did. Hers is, there's no balloon in that 20 years. I'm just going to pay her for 20 years.
Yep.
But let's say a seller goes, well, let's structure the payments based on the 20 years so you can afford the payments and you as the investor can make the cash flow. Mm-hmm. But I want all my money back in 5 years. So at the end of 5 years of you making me payments, all the remaining 15 years of payments need to be paid in one lump sum. We call that a balloon. It pops.
Interesting.
Okay. Sellers do that because they go, I'll let you get into the deal, but I want a balloon. So what I do is I structure my balloons to say, if I go to the balloon is due and the property does not appraise for my original purchase price, right? What I bought it for, then the balloon automatically extends another 5 years.
Oh,
so that protects me from, let's say the market goes down and now I can't appraise the property. My balloon stipulates that it extends automatically for another 5 years.
Okay. And if it does appraise for what you bought at, then you pay the rest.
You could do a handful of things. You could sell the property on the market.
Makes sense.
Right. We've sold properties on the market. Last year in December, we sold 70 properties where we had 5 year balloons on them. Mm. So I'll just take my cash, 1031 exchange them into other properties and just roll my money to the next deal. Okay.
Yep. Now, real estate crash, the time's come. What's going on? Are we about to crash real estate? Prices tank 20, 30, 40, 50% over the next 12 to 24 months?
I'm one of the few people that I have a different outlook on this.
Okay.
If I can buy properties at 0% to 3% seller finance, multifamily that are all cash flowing, and a lot of them with zero down payment, in my world, like Ryan Pineda, he just wants to gobble up multifamily. Mm-hmm. What do I care what the market is doing? What I care about is what rents are doing.
Okay.
Okay. And what have rents done since 1914, since we've tracked the data? They've only gone up. There's been one little blip that would not have wiped out anybody's cash flow. So I buy for cash flow. That's okay. The main thing I worry about. If I can cash flow in good or bad times, I really don't care what everybody else is doing.
Interesting.
I don't care. What do I care? I care about what are my terms, what are my interest rate, and how can I accumulate more and more and more and more, right?
Okay.
So, but the market, I look at that. I used to be a loan officer, and obviously we're in real estate. We do quite a few things. Yeah. Our fix and flip business, our buyers are now softening their offers. We went from having 45 offers in 2 hours to now we're like, oh crap. Like now it's taking a week to sell a property. Mm-hmm. It's still selling,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
but we're seeing a major softening of the market.
How recent? Are we talking in the past month?
Last 30 to 45 days.
Okay. Wow.
And it was immediate. It was like you list a property on Friday and the interest rates were still in the 4% range and offers were coming in, 45 offers in a day.
You think that's because the May 4th interest rate
increases? Mm-hmm. Yeah. 100%.
Oh, mortgage rates went up so fast. Crazy. I was shocked. That, like overnight, they went from like 3 to 4.5.
And they're going up two more times.
Am I crazy that they went up even before the actual federal fund rate went up? I feel like everyone anticipated the rate increase and they just baked it in.
Yeah, it does get baked in.
It's smart. Yeah. It's smart of them to do that. And then they've got two more rate hikes this summer. They're going to go up. Mm-hmm. I think that rates could hit 7 to 8%.
Four more this
they
year.
They said four more?
This year, four more this year.
So where could it go? Could it go 8 to 9%?
They say that they want to get their base federal funds rate to like 2.25 to 2.5% by the end of the year, the neutral rate. But that's not guaranteed. It could be three, it could
so
be
as
two,
a home,
it could be
as a homeowner,
1.5.
What does that mean for me as a homeowner? If I go to buy a house, what am I going to get an interest rate at average if that's the base rate for the Fed?
It could be 6 to 7, or five to seven, probably depending on your credit and the terms.
What on top of the federal fund rate do they tack on? 3 to 4%?
About that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if you think about that, look back in like the historical data of interest rates, is 6% really that high in the scheme of things?
No.
But when you come off of ultra low rates for such a long time.
People get used to it though.
Yeah. And when everything is so unaffordable, homes are more unaffordable than ever. Wages haven't rose nearly enough and inflation slicing and dicing people left and right. So I think that's why our viewers probably care about the real estate crashes, because a lot of them have either thought about buying a house or they own one house.
So let's ask this question. Really, this is I'm in real estate, so I see houses all the time. Does it really, I get it. For like the average person, that one property for them is their forever home and they want to get the best deal possible, but you're going to live there with your family. If you can afford it today, what do you care what the purchase price is? It's the comfort of your home.
Yeah, I think it's the monthly payment, but even monthly payments are up something like, what is it, like 40%?
Well, I think it's for mostly people that are debating whether they should buy now or just wait until this, you know, mythical crash. That
like, are we talking as homeowners or are we talking as investors?
I imagine future homeowners that are looking to buy soon.
That I would say that would be our resident agent, because I don't advise homeowners on what to buy. All I can tell you is that my buyers on our fix and flips have softened to the point where we are now having a gut check of like, holy crap, we got to buy less properties right now because we don't want to be holding. Right now we have 18 properties we're holding with hard money.
Yeah, on short-term flips, I'd say it's more risky than a buyer who's holding on for 7 to 10 years.
Right.
Probably doesn't make much of a difference. Or the investor who's going to hold on to it for 10 years and just wants the cash flow. Flips would be dangerous though.
Yeah, well, the reason that I ask is because, Jeremy, we talked about this, Target and Walmart's earnings were horrible, right? Mm-hmm. So if those staples and those retail giants, if the hiring freezes from tech, for example, that they've already started, spills over into those retail giants, people could go from like full-time to part-time to no-time.
Yeah.
And if they lose their jobs, then the demand for real estate, I think, goes away instantly. So I don't know, whenever I ask people about real estate, they always say like, no, our inventory is low, our demand is high. But to me, demand is such a soft metric that you just can't rely on it considering how fast things can change.
Yeah.
So when you look at the market, I suppose, Pace, if you didn't have a house and you wanted to buy a house, like your first time forever home, or even a starter home,
right?
And you were looking at the market right now and you're seeing what's going on, would you buy today or would you like wait?
No. No, I wouldn't.
You would not wait.
I wouldn't. I think what's going to happen is they're going to basically pause inflation. That's what their main goal is, right? Their main objective is like, holy crap, we're like nearing double digit inflation. And maybe we are in some way based on somebody else's metric. Mm-hmm. So they want to slow that down. So what's going to happen is they're going to get the interest rates up. And I think that towards the end of the year, the interest rates are going to come back down again and taper that off. And I think the best time to buy a house in Arizona, based on our data, November, December. Less buyers.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so there's less competition. And I think also they're going to lower interest rates again towards the end of the year. So
you think it's going to come back down?
I think not to 3%. Right. But I think that it'll soften back down to probably closer to 4.5 or 5%.
Okay.
I think we're going to see 6 to 7% in interest rates this summer.
It's interesting because the bet that I made was I took out a 7-year ARM at 2.6%.
Okay,
and,
love it.
And I think in 7 years from now, I think rates will be lower than they are today. I think
100%.
I think rates are going to be lower than 2-something percent.
No, than they are today.
I think like we're
in
addicted,
the 5%.
Yes, we're addicted to cheap
money.
Yeah, I don't think.
I told Andre to lock in a 30-year though.
I agree.
If I could lock in 2.6 for 30 years, I would have done that. But if it's
It was like 2.8.
No,
what was it for 30 years?
3.5.
Is it 3.5?
Yeah.
I would have still taken a 3.5.
I'm going to argue with Graham on this.
No, because it was a rental. So.
Oh, okay. I got it. So,
but even 3.5, I would have
done the 3.5. And the reason being is if you look at all the people back in 2008 that were landlords, buddies of mine, right? The people who got hosed and that were like offloading their inventory, who were those people?
Those were the variable rate guys. But to be fair, I looked at the cost and I said, right. Look, even if interest rates are 7% or something ridiculous in 7 years from now, could I afford it?
Right.
And the answer is yes, I could.
Yeah, so but that's going to eat into the cash flow.
To me, it's worth it. No, if I was to take a higher interest rate, it would eat into that cash flow.
I know, but 7 years from now, that would eat into the cash flow.
It would, but at that point, I could pay it off if I wanted to.
It's an interesting world because you got two completely different mindsets here, right? Yeah. The mindset of like every dollar freaking counts. Right. And what else can I do with that dollar?
Right.
Versus my mindset probably is a little bit more like yours, where I'm like, if I can afford it, what do I care?
Right.
Right. And if I'm continually paying it down, what do I ultimately care?
I mean, it's a gamble for sure, but man,
I'm with you, Andre.
Yeah.
I'm with you.
I think rates will go back down.
But didn't you just sell your house? What did you do?
Oh yeah, I'm curious what happened to that.
Oh, real estate's gonna crash.
Are
you in the belief that real estate's crashing?
100%.
Okay, educate me, tell me what you're thinking.
So I have my house. I just listed my house.
Right.
Okay? The company.
This is the one in Vegas or Phoenix?
This one's in Henderson.
Okay, Henderson.
Yeah. This is like just an extra property I have. So the company I'm working with, they're like the premier luxury company. And last weekend, they have 80 listings. And I told Graham this, but guess how many showings they had on 80 listings last weekend?
This is great. I love this. Okay. 80 listings over a weekend of showings. I would say they probably had 100.
Okay. Andre?
Gosh, now that you asked that question, it's probably like 20 or something ridiculous.
Two.
Oh, my gosh.
Two.
Two people showed up to look at it?
This is eight,
for
bro,
80
that's
80, 80,
no, for 80 listings.
Yeah, sorry. Two people came for 80.
80, for 80 listings.
Wait, for Henderson? For
No, that's for this premier
for the company.
This is oh, the,
I,
this
I
the,
find so, that hard to believe. Yeah. I mean, I trust dude, what you say, yeah. But I do find that really suspicious and hard to believe.
Yeah.
Oh, you know why? Wasn't it EDC weekend?
Oh.
No, that was this weekend. This is last weekend.
Oh. Okay, so they
wasn't it last? No, it was last weekend.
Vegas
Jeremy.
Listed right yeah. now.
Last weekend was yeah. EDC.
No, Vegas, this weekend. Or this
weekend, too.
Weekend.
This last weekend.
Weekend.
Yeah. So not this last no, week. Not like a few days ago. The week before that.
So what you're saying is you're seeing kind of the signs
of Coachella.
People are softening. Buyer, consumer
yeah,
confidence.
Massively. And I think it's happening so much quicker than anybody really realized. And, you know, for instance, I'm obviously super in the stock market, right? Snapchat reported earnings last month. They just had to bring down numbers and they're like, dude, we're not even close to the numbers we're going to hit, to the low end.
Right.
They're like, so we're in an environment that we haven't seen that since 2008. Where companies are like, we're going to hit this number. And then a month later, they're like, dude, no,
well,
we're
tell
not
the Walmart
number.
Ex-CEO, he's like, oh, it's like Armageddon for that quarter.
Apocalyptic.
Mm-hmm. There we go.
Yeah. He's like, if we had inventory go up, he was a former CEO of Walmart. He said, if we had inventory go up 8%, that was bad. He's like, if it's 15%, that's like super bad. You might get fired. 32% is apocalyptic. Then Target came out the next day, 41% rise in
excess
inventory.
Excess inventory.
Yes. Yeah. So I have a lot of worries about.
So what do you do? What do you do in a down market? Because I know what I do, right?
Yeah.
I'm not as smart as you. I follow you. All of you guys are genius. I listen to stock stuff, and I'm like, all I care about is can my property cash flow, and can I own it with almost nothing out of my pocket?
Yep.
And that's as smart as I am.
I love that. Yeah, I take a little bit of a similar approach to the market. So I buy even in a down market. Okay. I'm like, I'm increasing my ownership of this company, 100 shares at a time, 1,000 shares at a time. But I can tell you, I'm I think the stock market is usually a pretty good forecast. Like the stock market started peaked in the summer of 07 and started to fall before a lot of people even realized we were in a recession. A lot of people didn't realize till it was like 08, 09. And the stock market bottomed around February of 09. Real estate didn't bottom for another 2.5 years.
So are you buying on the way down or do you sell all your positions and wait for the bottom and buy all the, I don't understand the stock world. Oh yeah, yeah,
I buy the whole time because I don't know where the bottom is. That's the thing, like we're down 30% NASDAQ year to date.
Okay.
I don't know where the bottom is. It might be 35%.
So you'll dollar cost average.
Exactly.
And can you guys buy stocks through FTX as well or just
now crypto? You can, yeah, that you're going to be able to very shortly
here. Okay, so I go into my account and I'm essentially setting up an automatic buy on the way down and I'm just buying the same amount every single week.
Buy every day.
Yeah. Andre buys every day.
Statistically you're supposed to be buying as often as possible consistently
every day. Every week, right?
Every day.
You buy every day as
yeah,
well.
It's wow. fun. It's fun. I enjoy it. Wow. I log on. And yeah.
I put in like $1,000 a day. I'm not like Graham where he's like putting in $4,000 a day. But I'm putting so, like $1,000.
In your guys' world, right? So I'm heavy real estate and I always will be. I'm getting older. So I look at this. I go, in 30 years, do I want to have anything to do with work? And do I want to have anything to do with like strategy or whatever? I want all my properties to be paid off by my tenants, right? So that's my strategy. It doesn't sound like that's your guys' strategy. So in a down market, are we thinking stocks and crypto is the way to go in this room?
No, you're sticking with a strategy that's diversified and just betting that the entire economy eventually will recover and go back up as it has throughout the last 120 years.
Okay.
I agree with Jeremy. You can't predict the top. You can't predict the bottom. It's really difficult. People lose a lot of money trying to do that.
So you're buying the stuff you really like and you believe in.
Yeah. For me, it's everything. Funds. It's just an index. For me, it's an index fund. But so basically it's a worldwide economy. Is the world economy going to grow 10 years from now, 20 years from now? Probably yes. And I'm willing to bet on that.
So are the people that are listening to this, are they looking at this as this is a passive way of me making me money? Or is this more of a retirement strategy of I'm buying things?
It should be both. I mean, index fund investing is as passive as it gets. And long term, it's been great to build wealth. Some people prefer individual stocks and trying to outperform that. But mine is just,
you did a YouTube video recently. Maybe it was an older one, but I feel like it was recent. You talked about a monkey was basically outperformed the S&P or something.
I mean,
like
these last 2 years have been so stupid that yes, a monkey made 40% in the stock market in 2021, monkey. It outperformed the S&P 500.
Small caps took off, right?
There were a few stocks in there that just did exceptionally well. Ford was one of the best performers that the monkey picked. But it just goes to show, I mean, the last 2 years, you could be blindfolded, throw a dart on a board, and you would have made money. And that's where, you know, so many new investors popped up because it was easy and just didn't matter. You buy something and 3 months later, it's 20% higher.
This is what happened in 2006. I was a contractor and I was basically sweeping the floors of other people's job sites. I was just getting started, right? And I remember my buddy who was a plumber on the job site goes, I'm done. I'm out of construction. I go, what the hell are you, what are you doing? He goes, I'm flipping houses now. All these houses that we're working on, where I'm flipping houses. I go, what are you talking about? He goes, you know, the house we worked on 2 months ago, that was my house. And by the time it was finished, I sold it for $300,000 over what I bought it for. I'm like, oh my gosh.
That was 2021 for the market.
Oh yeah, and 2020.
So do you guys, you're saying that that is what it we just
happened.
Went through.
It already happened, yeah.
People are buying same millions with crypto. Of dollars. Same with crypto. I mean, just any market you could think of, any speculative asset, it doesn't like, and I think it skewed people's confidence that, oh wow, it's easy. And they expected that to continue. And I think a lot of people are in for a rude awakening. If they just gone in 2020, it's not investing.
Okay, so
that's an anomaly year. I mean, that's
Jeremy.
Not,
yeah. You've got an argument that the real estate market is crashing.
Okay? I got an argument that it's the starting. We're like in the first inning.
I got it, and I can feel that, and I can understand where you're coming from. So, what do you suggest? Let's say that you go back to like 2008, 2009, 2010. Do you just ride in that world? Let's say I'm a newer person into stocks and crypto. Do I just ride it on the way down and I keep dollar cost averaging in and just wait until the bottom essentially? Is that the strategy?
Yeah. I mean, if something we learned from kind of 07, 09 crash in the market is as long as you were buying the whole way down and the whole way up, you ended up making a lot of money. And so if you're talking about the stock market, that's usually the best way to do it. I think real estate gets a little complicated because that's a market that can lag big time. The stock market's so reactive. It's like, you know, boom, boom, boom. real estate lags in such a major way. So I think when to bring it back to real estate, everybody's looking at it and they're like, wait, are we in a moment now where if I buy, I'm going to this home's going to be worth less in 5 years? And I personally know a lot of people that foreclosed homes. I have a close friend who out here, he bought a house in North Las Vegas for over $400,000 in 06 or the beginning of 07. That house in 2011 or 10 when he short sold or foreclosed or whatever was $160,000.
Yeah.
You know, my wife's mom, she had one of those balloon payment situations and like somebody lost her job. They couldn't afford it anymore. Boom, they lost the house. And so I think that's what a lot of people are kind of thinking about. They're like, are we going to, if we do have this crash, are we talking like a 20% down real estate? Are we talking 10%? Or are we talking this is going to be like 50% and you're going to get into foreclosures? You're going to get people that have homes that are being built right now. And this neighborhood does, obviously.
Dude, this.
That end up walking away.
It's going crazy right now.
I feel like that's too early to say like the intensity of it.
Yeah.
I tend to agree with you that real estate will soften like it already has. But how much... like how much down it'll go, I think it's too early.
So the people that are arguing that real estate is not going to crash, because there's a lot of them.
Yeah.
Are those the people who made a bunch of money in the last 2 years or that are like hoping that the ride doesn't end? Is that really where that confidence is coming from?
I think so. And I think some of it comes to like, oh, we underbuilt homes. I think that's an argument that's made out there a lot of times. But yeah, I think slowly some of those people are starting to go away. I think since the trends have changed in the last month. But I mean, how many people are really arguing that real estate won't crash? Would you argue that, Graham?
All of the people in my circle.
I don't think it's going to crash.
They all argue that?
Well, because they all own real estate. Yeah. So they have a biased opinion.
What about you?
I don't care. I care about is cash flow.
I know. Yeah. You're in a different situation. But given your like vantage point, what would you bet on happening? Real estate going down?
I fear is consumer confidence. I feel like what happens is more and more people talk about the negative thing and then more and more people jump on it. Right. Okay. And so I feel like it's inevitable that we're going to have something bad happen. To what degree, I have no idea.
Yeah. I mean, real estate at the end of the day, if you really want to think about this most simple way possible, I don't care if you're talking rents or people buying homes, comes back to jobs. If you have a job, you can pay your mortgage. You can pay your rent. If your job goes away and you can't get another job, that's when it's like that.
So
rent's late.
Is the argument for the Walmart and the Target earnings something that trickles into the jobs market now and saying less people are needed, less jobs are needed?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
That's
and
where
so
we're getting
now
into
we're
this.
It's like,
yeah. That's the fear. If those layoffs, especially in tech, start to spill over, then it's
okay. So you brought up something, and I know we've gone long here, but I want to answer why multifamily just real quick, because this all brings into this.
Okay,
why are so many people? And I look at Grant Cardone, who I'm friendly with. He came on our show. Mm-hmm. Like we've been doing things with him. He's crazy. Okay, but in some you 10X, can make a
baby.
Dude. But you look at what he's doing. He's going after Class A. Which I fear Class A, right? A very nice apartment.
Well, yeah, what Class that means? A.
Class A is like you look like it looks like the Ferrari of apartment complexes.
Oh, so
it's
like turnkey, Miami luxury done. Type stuff.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So what happened you look at the data back in the crash, the last crash. What happened is rent rates went up in every class except for Class A. Class A went down.
That's good to know.
So what was happening is there were a tenant in one Class A apartment and another tenant in another Class A apartment. They go, crap, we can't afford this.
Yeah.
So now two people are shacking up and downgrading to a Class B.
That makes sense.
So they're really like good. Most of the apartments you guys see around Vegas are Class B. Yeah. Like really nice.
For sure.
Okay. Yeah. Really nice. Mm-hmm. But the ones that are on the strip, those are Class A.
Right.
Yeah.
So you look at Grant Cardone primarily investing in Class A. I go, man, I'm like, a lot of your tenants could move out of those properties in a downturn. That scares
the heck
out of
me. I think that's the business model that's going to hurt so bad in this downturn.
Wow.
Grant,
that's a great
point.
The
flip argument is that sometimes those are the people who don't care and they make so much money that they could afford to pay those prices.
But do you really think Class A are like, I don't think they're like crazy
wealthy. It depends on the tenant.
It
depends on the tenant.
But like if they're making six figures, what are they, like tech people, doctors, let's say like professional workers, their jobs could disappear too.
So well, again, I mean, you guys go back to the data all the time, right? Yeah. You guys are probably the best in this whole entire industry of researching and then putting things together. Mm-hmm. Go back and do the research on what happened with the Class A tenants in the crash. Mm-hmm. You'll see that that's the class that got slammed. So what everybody's been doing the last couple of years, me included, is we go, how can we get C plus or B minus? Because those are the classes that when the economy crashes, those actually surge in rents.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Okay, so that's the thing is like, I'm not buying for value, I'm buying for cash flow.
Yeah, I love that.
Because my cash flow will pay off my debt.
And that's the same reason why if somebody came to you and they said, hey, I want to get into rental properties, you wouldn't tell them go buy luxury mansions for $2 million. You'd say,
I had somebody come to me yesterday in Laguna Beach. Seller wants to seller finance a $5 million property right on the ocean. I go, nope, stay as far away from that as possible, because the seller couldn't get his list price and the seller's belligerent. And they go, I want $5 million. Couldn't get $5 million. So then they go to the wholesalers and the market and go, I will seller finance this $5 million property on the ocean to you, but I want $5 million. I'm like, how are you going to cash flow that when the economy crashes and Airbnb and short-term rentals all take a dip? You're toast. Mm-hmm. And you're one of these real estate investors that go, yeah, I acquired all this debt and this leverage and I got completely ran out of the market. So
makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
Yep. I stay away from that.
What's going on with your property, Jeremy? Did you get, how many showings did you have?
Zero.
Danny?
What?
You got what?
Hasn't had any showings.
Nope, not even one. So do you have any desire to list lower?
No.
So what are you going to do? Hold
it. Like if it doesn't move, it doesn't
so you'll,
move.
I don't think you would rather,
but you'll there. Lose, but every month you're losing money. You're losing
I
both opportunity
if
cost.
If I came down and put a ridiculous price, it still probably doesn't move. I think it's gotten that weak that fast.
So what would you do if you don't sell it? Do you hold it?
Yeah, I'll just hold it. I'll and just do, use it and as do like what? An extra office. And do it as a
but that's costing. But that's costing.
That's baller, bro. That's baller.
Because you have to think it's the opportunity cost.
It. Yeah.
The opportunity cost, taxes, insurance, upkeep. It's an expensive office.
Yeah.
So every month, it's like you may as well just be taking less.
Could you
money
turn
now
into a short term rental?
I don't think I would want to do that. Maybe a long term.
Because you don't want the hassle of like turnover and all that kind of stuff.
Well, I don't think it's a desirable short term location.
I know that too.
I did mention to Jeremy, I do think you could get a tenant in there and all of your costs will be covered and you'll make a little bit of money.
Yeah.
It's not the best rental at the price point, but for you, since you bought it lower, your mortgage is low, you got a good loan on it.
Yeah.
Could make sense and you just have a tenant.
Yeah. Yeah, I might do that. But it's very, very concerning. And then in that neighborhood, like 5 other homes just came up in the past week. And that we have not had inventory in the neighborhood for a long time. And so it seems like people are kind of like, if I want to sell, I better get out now.
You're going to, and the thing is, you'll get other sellers that don't have the luxury that you have of, hey, I can turn this into
another
office. So
they will drop the price.
They'll just undercut the market. Now you've got lower comps in the neighborhood and it starts trending down.
Shocked you haven't gotten a single showing. Because when you look on Zillow, you see that it's been viewed like 600-700 times. It's got like a few dozen saves.
Wow.
I'm very pessimistic. I don't think it's
really
moving. I don't think there's a buyer out there. I don't think anything in that neighborhood moves.
Here's a trick. Have you tried? Dirty little trick here. Call your real estate agent from another number and see if they pick up.
Oh, I was just going to say this.
Yeah,
dude, the number one problem with agents is that when I want to get a deal done with an agent, mailbox is full.
Yep.
Oh.
Not only that, but you call and they don't pick up. You leave a message and then like the next day they call back at like some weird time.
Oh, that's
interesting.
My biggest thing as an agent was I was always picking up my phone no matter what. So from like 5 o'clock in the morning, if I was sleeping, I'd pick up the phone.
That's
10 p.m. at night,
point.
Always pick up the phone.
That's
you always talk.
Point.
They hate leaving a message. And half the time, if it goes to voicemail, I'm not going to leave a message.
So first, you're eliminating the human variable.
Yeah.
Mistake.
I would call
and just
see if they pick up the phone.
That's genius. Okay. Let me call. Let's call him right now. Let's call him. Alex, call him, bro. Call him. I wonder if I can convince his agent to sell it to me on seller finance.
Oh, my God. That's fun. Yeah, ask if the seller would do seller finance.
Yeah, I'll bring it up.
He's calling Jeremy's real estate agent to see if they pick up.
Hi, this is.
Hi, Gretchen. My name's Pace Morby. How you doing?
Good, thanks.
Hey, I'm calling about the property on.
Yes.
Are you guys getting a ton of movement on that, or do you think I still have a chance to buy that thing?
You can buy it.
Love it. Are you guys getting a lot of showings in that neighborhood? It looks like there's a lot of listings popping up.
There are. Well, my teammate sold the one next door in like the first week. But other than that, yes, there's quite a few that have been coming on, but this one's a pretty one. It has the nice next gen suite downstairs and big master with strip views upstairs.
Wow. So I'm out of town. Okay. I live in Arizona. I'm looking for a second home and I'm looking for a buyer that would be willing to sell on seller finance. I'm looking for a seller that would sell on seller finance. Has your seller indicated they'd be open to something like that?
They have not.
Would you mind having that conversation with them?
I can ask them.
I would make sure you're commi- I would make sure you'd get your commission, and I'd make sure I get your list, whatever the list price is, plus your commission. I'll make sure that gets handled. But would you call them and see if they'd be open to that kind of offer?
Do you have terms you want to propose?
I would have him, since he would be my bank, I would have him propose the terms.
Okay.
Sound good?
I'll ask him.
Amazing. Can I follow up with you tomorrow?
Sure.
Thank you. I appreciate you.
Okay. Sounds good.
Talk amazing. You thank you.
Okay. Thanks.
Bro, that's great news.
Wow. Okay.
Good on her for picking up her phone. Bro. That is fantastic. Okay, I mean, it's good for her.
This
I mean,
this good is good news, though.
That is fantastic. It's that's good advertising
and
for
it's
her.
Bad news.
Yeah,
it's good
yeah,
news.
No, I was gonna say that. It's good, both. But it's bad.
Yeah, I'm rooting for her. I'm like, she's picking up the phone,
bro. What a great
at 8 p.m. and selling the house.
But that proves your point,
good.
Jeremy.
Yeah,
yeah,
that
it
proves
does.
Your point.
It does. Yeah, yeah. You know,
that's the bad news.
That's the bad news. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I mean, at that particular company, you're not gonna get.
She's good.
Yeah.
When you said she's premier, like you can tell she's premier.
Yes,
you hired the right people.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
But yeah,
I like that a lot, man.
I know. It's almost that makes would be me so better happy. If it was kind of like another situation, like, oh, they're just lazy. You just need to get somebody else to sell it. But yeah, unfortunately, it's not.
She's good, man. But I like her.
Thanks. Yeah. That was smooth.
That was really good.
Yeah. It wasn't my idea. Yeah. That was freak. Awesome.
Yeah, that's better than I would have
done. Don't
give
these away. These ideas away on YouTube, dude. Don't give these away. These ideas away.
I'll give them away. That was you were great,
bro. I do. Yeah. I do this all day long. Yeah. I love this. Thank you guys for having me. This is fun.
Yeah. Wow. Goodness, I learned so much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Me too.
I'm overwhelmed.
This has been amazing. Thanks for coming on. I hope everybody enjoyed this. The Millennium Money Squad. I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. Something different. And
I know. Where are you located?
I live in Phoenix area.
How often do you come to Vegas?
Once a month.
Okay.
We're here all the time. Somebody's always asked.
Once a month?
All the time.
All right.
Why you don't text me?
Well, I texted. I texted you a couple months ago and I go, hey, do you have a magician I can hire?
Oh, I never responded to that.
Well, you said you'd look and you didn't, and you're busy. So I just went and found somebody from Cirque du Soleil and hired them for like 10 grand for 2 hours.
Wow.
10 grand for 2 hours?
Well, Jeremy knows how to juggle. Magic. He could do this. Yeah.
I will for that.
I spoke on stage in front of like 7,000 people, and what I wanted is I wanted them to make me disappear.
Did they do it?
Yes.
Oh.
They made me disappear and then reappear from the future.
Oh my God.
Okay, wait, who did you get? What's the name?
I'll give you his name.
He actually has a show. I probably know.
He has a show.
David
Shin something or other.
Shrimp.
No.
Shrimp limb.
Shrimp limb.
I don't know.
So yeah, what I wanted is
Brown Blaine.
I know Vinny. He was my neighbor.
Really?
Yeah.
He's a sweetheart.
He was in America's Got Talent.
Yeah. So here's what he says. He says
that's cool.
He says I'll charge you whatever he was going to charge me. I go, because you were a referral from a friend, I'll pay you four times what you offered me.
What?
Because the thing is.
Wait, he offered you four times less to do the gig.
He offered me what his going rate was, and I said, because it's short notice, I want to pay you four times more.
Does that? That's
amazing. This was my budget.
What?
Well, it was a referral from a friend.
Okay.
And it's one of those things where if you want your friends to refer more people to you, you want that person, Vinny, to go back to Dave, who referred, and go, this guy took care of me.
That's fair.
So he brought in a contraption from Cirque du Soleil. He made me disappear, come back from the future through this contraption. It was cool. And basically what I did is I said, all right, guys, I'm from 20 years in the future, and here's the statistics of everybody in the audience of what you accomplish and what you do. And I had this whole thing. So I had people that are like,
you look like a wizard.
You don't take action. You don't take action. Wow. You're going to get divorced. It was like the whole thing. And it was really, really fun.
That's so cool.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Vinny's great, man. You hired the right guy.
He's a sweetheart.
Vinny's great.
Yeah.
Cool.
Okay, so A&E, what night is the show on? Is it
it's
like
on Saturdays, and it streams every day on Hulu and Amazon and all that kind of stuff.
Hulu and Amazon, okay, cool.
Yeah, guys, if you want Pace to come back again, just comment down below, let us know. Make sure to subscribe as well.
Here's what you guys should do. Guys should let me buy, I'm going to buy a piece of property here in Vegas. And I'm gonna bring you guys. I'll do a follow. Here's what I'll do. And Andre and I talked about this earlier. I will find a $0 down, 0% interest seller finance deal, and I will bring it on the show, and I'll show you guys how I structure it, and I'll bring you guys in as partners on the deal with no money out of your pocket.
That'd be cool. That'd be
All right, deal. Yeah. Okay. I'm down.
Cool. Yeah.
Oh wait, Jeremy, really quick. What's this?
Oh, I brought this for you and Andre.
Oh, really?
An almond.
Thank you.
And I would have brought you one too, my friend.
Wow.
But I didn't
know
until last minute.
I said dessert.
It's breakfast.
Oh.
Or you can have it as dessert.
I always say this looks like dessert.
What's the cool thing about it besides the packaging?
Is it Tattooed Chef?
It's Tattooed Chef. It's a company I own, and it's a plant-based food
company.
We
make fun of Jeremy for this company because it's TTCF, so he's been buying it for forever.
Well, not forever, but for like a year.
We make fun of him for being the largest shareholder, which he's not the top 10, but unfortunately, but it feels like he is.
I got to have 500,000 shares.
The thing is, the food is really good. And the stock prices keeps going down. But the food is good.
It's inversely proportional to the food. Like,
the better the food gets, the lower the stock price goes.
Can you buy this stock on FTX?
I don't know as of right now. No. So, I don't know.
You could buy it. How about this? You could buy it at public.com/Graham.
Oh, gosh. But yeah, so enjoy those, gentlemen.
Thank you. Everybody
watching at home, go buy 5 or 10, as many as you can.
And go check out Pace's show, Triple Digit Flip.
Yes.
Yeah.
That looks amazing. So.
Well, thanks for this, man. I really appreciate it.
All righty, guys. Cool. Thanks for joining us.
Until next time.
Subscribe.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.